The Sunday papers reassured him. If the Sunday Times said it was Sunday, you could be sure that they'd investigated the matter. And yesterday was Saturday, of course. Yesterday was Saturday, and he'd never forget Saturday for as long as he lived, if only he could remember what it was he wasn't meant to forget. Seeing that he was in the kitchen, Newt decided to make breakfast. He moved around the kitchen as quietly as possible to avoid waking the rest of the household and found every sound magnified. The antique fridge had a door that shut like the crack of doom. The kitchen tap dribbled like a diuretic gerbil but made a noise like Old Faithful. And he couldn't find where anything was. In the end, as every human being who has ever breakfasted on their own in someone else's kitchen has done since the early dawn of time, he had to make do with unsweetened instant black coffee. Except for Giovanni Jacopo Casanova, 1725 to 1798, famed amourist and litterateur, who revealed in volume 12 of his memoir that, as a matter of course, he carried around with him at all times a small valise containing a loaf of bread, a pot of choice Seville marmalade, a knife, fork and small spoon for stirring, two fresh eggs packed with care in unspun wool, a tomato or lavapple, a small frying pan, a small saucepan, a spirit burner, a chafing dish, a tin box of salted butter of the Italian type, two bone china plates, also a portion of honeycomb as a sweetener for my breath and for my coffee. Let my readers understand me when I say to them all, a true gentleman should always be able to break his fast in the manner of a gentleman wheresoever he may find himself. On the kitchen table was a roughly rectangular, leather-bound cinder. He could just make out the words N-I-E and ACK on the charred cover. What a difference a day made, he thought. It turns you from the ultimate reference book to a mere barbecue briquette. Now then, how exactly had they got it? He recalled a man who smelled of smoke and wore sunglasses even in the darkness, and there was other stuff all running together, boys on bikes, an unpleasant buzzing, a small, grubby, staring face. It all hung around in his mind, not exactly forgotten, but forever hanging on the cusp of recollection, a memory of things that hadn't happened. And there was the matter of Dick Turpin. It looked like the same car, except that forever afterwards it seemed able to do 250 miles on a gallon of petrol, ran so quietly that you practically had to put your mouth over the exhaust pipe to see if the engine was firing, and issued its voice-synthesized warnings in a series of exquisite and perfectly phrased haikus, each one original and apt. Late frost burns the bloom, would a fool not let the belt restrain the body, it would say, and the cherry blossom tumbles from the highest tree, one needs more petrol. How could you have that? He sat staring at the wall until a knock at the door brought him back to earth. There was a small dapper man in a black raincoat standing on the doorstep. He was holding a cardboard box, and he gave Newt a bright smile. "Mr.," he consulted the piece of paper in one hand, "Pulsiver." "Pulsiver," said Newt. "It's a hard S."
"I'm ever so sorry," said the man. "I've only ever seen it written down." "Eh, well then, it would appear that this is for you and Mrs. Pulsiver."
Newt gave him a blank look.
"There is no Mrs. Pulsiver," he said coldly.
The man removed his bowler hat.
"Oh, I'm terribly sorry," he said.
"I mean that... Well, there's my mother," said Newt, "but she's not dead. She's just in Dorking. I'm not married."
"How odd. The letter is quite specific."
"Who are you?" said Newt.
He was wearing only his trousers, and it was chilly on the doorstep. The man balanced the box awkwardly and fished out a card from an inner pocket. He handed it to Newt. It read, "Giles Baddicombe, Roby, Roby, Redfern and By Chance Solicitors, 13 Demdike Chambers, Preston."
"Yes," he said politely. "And what can I do for you, Mr. Baddicombe?"
"You could let me in," said Mr. Baddicombe.
"You're not serving a writ or anything, are you?" said Newt.
The events of last night hung in his memory like a cloud, constantly changing whenever he thought he could make out a picture, but he was vaguely aware of damaging things and had been expecting retribution in some form.
"No," said Mr. Baddicombe, looking slightly hurt. "We have people for that sort of thing."
He wandered past Newt and put the box down on the table.
"To be honest," he said, "we're all very interested in this. Mr. Bychance nearly came down himself, but he doesn't travel well these days."
"Look," said Newt, "I really haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about."
"This," said Mr. Baddicombe, proffering the box and beaming like Aziraphale about to attempt a conjuring trick, "is yours. Someone wanted you to have it. They were very specific."
"A present," said Newt.
He eyed the sellotaped cardboard cautiously and then rummaged in the kitchen drawer for a sharp knife.
"I think it more a bequest. said Mr. Baddicombe.